If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Back in 2016, Jon Favreau was kind enough to be the very first person we recorded for our film music podcast, Soundtrackin'. 151 episodes later, Jon returns to discuss his flabbergasting remake of Disney's 1994 musical, The Lion King, a mind-boggling, photorealistic animation starring Donald Glover, Seth Rogen, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Billy Eichner, and Beyoncé. As with the original, this new film is scored by Hans Zimmer, with Elton John returning to rework his compositions from the original alongside South African composer, producer and singer Le Boheme. Plenty more on their fine contributions shortly. Before that, a word from our friends at Thriva, a finger prick blood test that lets you understand and track your health. It's quite extraordinary what you can find out, with insights into everything from your sleep, mood and fitness levels to key biomarkers like cholesterol, vitamin D and liver function. Simply do the test at home and post your sample to Thriva's third-party accredited lab. Within 48 hours, you'll get your GP results and personal recommendations on how to improve, all via your online dashboard. So head to thriva.co and personalise your own Thriva kit using promo code SOUND to get £25 off. That's thriva.co with the code SOUND for a discount on your finger prick blood test. And so to John, via a tune you'll find impossible not to sing along to, as performed by Billy and Seth, a.k.a. Timon and Pumbaa.
In the jungle, the mighty jungle, the lion sleeps tonight. In the jungle, the quiet jungle, the lion sleeps tonight. The peaceful village, the lion sleeps tonight. Near the village, the quiet village, the lion sleeps tonight. Oh, wee, wee, bum, bum, away. Wee, wee.
John, I have to say a massive thank you because you were the first ever interview we did for this podcast.
No kidding.
Yeah,
what project?
Soundtracking.
Oh, yes.
And
yes.
So
What was it for Jungle Book? Jungle Book, which is three years
coming up in August for us.
That's right.
Yeah, so thank you, and it's great to have you back. For The Lion King, which you teased us with when we last spoke, you were like, yeah, I'm doing it.
Yes.
It's next. Congratulations, first of all, on this. And the music, obviously, is such a huge part of this film from the original. And when you started thinking about how you wanted to approach the music side of this film, I don't know, where did you start with it? Was it always going to be the case that Hans was going to come?
Yeah, I mean, the hope was you had Hans Zimmer and you had Le Boheme, and then to get Elton John back and Tim Rice.
Yeah.
And then all the new, you know, the casting. I really wanted to cast it with people that would sing themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So bringing in Donald Glover and Beyonce.
Yeah.
And then the whole thing kind of opened up. But I knew we wanted to stay very true to the original, because the music is, as I've learned through the process of working all the beautiful visuals on it, the music is still the key ingredient to this film.
Was it an interesting conversation with, what was a conversation with Hans about how he would, not update it, that's not the right choice of word, but maybe reimagine it or, yeah.
I just knew, it's like casting. If you get the right person in the role, you're just putting the ingredients together and you're going to trust that they're going to, you know, you could guide them slightly, but really what you're trying to do is inspire them to do their best work. And in the case of Hans Zimmer, just getting him, and he felt the pressure, and he had the sense of what was required. Much of it was because he felt that he was very compromised the first time around, if you could believe it.
Wow. So, well, he said that last night at the Q&A.
He wasn't kidding. He wasn't being coy.
He said, I got to go back and correct some mistakes.
Yeah, there was a lot of, you know, digital instruments. He never got the full orchestra he wanted. The way he tells it, I think they never even released the full score at the time. He felt that it was so compromised, which is so, to me, mind-boggling. Because it's such a moment. It's like, it's like talking about a Sgt. Pepper. You know, it's like talking about a classic album. It was perfect. They built upon it with Songs of the Pride Lands that came later with Lebo. He continued to, Lebo started to build upon what they started. Mm. Also, this incredibly interesting story, if you speak to him, about what was happening politically in South Africa at the time that the score was being recorded in the choir, because that was when Mandela was coming into leadership and was free, and there was a sense of renewal in that part of the world, and they were recording in the middle of all of this, and it was really capturing that energy, which is something that I didn't understand that background to how it was being done, but you could feel the energy in the original. So to let Hans, reunite with the people that he had worked with before, and bringing Lebo in and having all of them explain what it was like the first time around, and the fact that they were embracing the imagery and the approach that I was taking, because it could have been off-putting to them. I didn't know. This was just a prospect that I had based on my experience working on Jungle Book and and seeing what the technology could do and seeing how I could maybe be of service to retelling this tale in a way that was accurate and not taking it away from what people have come to love from the original. And so they would tell me stories about, you know, not just them, but people that were collaborating on this from the stage production, from Disney, people who aren't credited, who had worked on the original, all of whom had a tremendous interest in ensuring that this honored the legacy of the original. So I had this wonderful deep dive into the way a classic piece of cinema comes together. Mm-hmm. And much like Star Wars or Casablanca, you know, what we think back on as classics that were all inevitable at the time seemed extremely precarious, and things come together in a way that are either guided by the hand of fate or luck or just the talent of people coming together for a moment in time. But here you have something that feels inevitable that at the time felt extremely precarious and compromised.
What's brilliant as well is he was very much starting out as a composer then, you know, in terms of it was a big deal for him. But I love how much he loves what he does. He's, yes. His energy and his enthusiasm is infectious. It's incredible. Yes. And hearing him talk about how he actually recorded and rehearsed the yes. score for this in particular, which I know you were privy to and very emotional.
Yeah. Well, it was a very emotional ride. I mean, It felt like a good idea I felt like I could bring something to this and help take this story to the new generation. What I didn't know was how emotional the journey would be, and just looking at footage and animation and hearing voice performances and being there while the orchestra was scoring it, watching it as we color timed it and did sound mixes, and you're watching this story hundreds and hundreds of times. And it forces you to, you know, I think that subconsciously you choose projects that you work on because there's something that you have to work out, that subconsciously you know you have to work out. And it forces you to face your subconscious directly over the course of this. And so for 3 years to experience this, I think it's changed me as a person and emotionally. It's therapy. It's really sophisticated therapy.
Well, that's amazing, because most people would probably say they need therapy after coming out of a three-year project.
No, it is.
Vice versa.
And Hans talks about this, and he's really been quite a bit of a mentor. I'll say this because he's not in the room. But he's been quite a mentor to me, because he embraces the aspect of it that's not just geared towards the finished product, but the process itself. I find that the masters that I've worked with all tend to have in common that it's the process that is the reward, and that, as Jeff Bridges said to me, we're working on Iron Man after Rap one day, and he's as upbeat of a person as you can get, and one that really loves what he does. Mm. He said, the film, he says, that's just the skin of the snake. He says, this is the real thing, what we're doing right now. This is the process. This is the part that I love. And he was right. You know, you start off just wanting the movie. You want the poster on your wall. Yeah. You want the pats on the back. But it's the communal experience of working with these talented people who are so dedicated and sharing this vision that becomes the real gift of this, the career that I am lucky enough to have. And Hans Zimmer was very much about, hey, let's get these people together. Let's bring in these new people. Let's incorporate this new song. Let's update this, and let's not be afraid of the future. Mm. Let's not get too precious with the nostalgia, but let's also honor what came before.
Thank you.
look to people like him to help guide you through this and engage with a career where often you have to compromise because of circumstances, or you have to figure out what's the best choice when none are perfect, and how to maintain yourselves with, you know, he's a classy guy and he is someone that people seek out, and he's, you know, seeing him work with Elton John and Lebo M.
Wow.
And Pharrell and
I hope
Beyonce.
You've got a picture of that.
It's really like in how he interacts and how he's he's still authentically him, but they're
collaborative.
Very collaborative, and the music people collaborate in a way that us film people don't understand. I mean, in comedy I get it, and it's fun with improv and fun to record with Seth and Billy and Donald Glover.
Yeah.
And there is a sense of there's a tradition of collaboration there too. But with music, it's much more like alchemy. And to be able to have a front row seat as songs would come together, or Pharrell and Hans would discuss something, or they'd both be playing or humming right in Hans's workshop and play it against picture, and just watching it kind of land on them. I'm very fortunate to have been in these rooms and been around people and watched these things unfold. It makes me really. As a film fan and as a music fan, it just makes me really appreciative.
Geek out. Absolutely
yes.
Geek out.
Yeah, totally. No, for sure.
I mean, the casting is extraordinary in the film. And, you know, in particular with people like Beyonce and Donald, who are these big characters, big voices, big personalities. One of the many things that you've done brilliantly is the balance is so right in terms of their performance. You know, it's not about a kind of anything showy or whatever. It's just, and I guess that's quite a fine line to try and maneuver as well.
Sure, but it's not me doing it, really. It's Beyonce deciding that she's, you know, Beyonce could break all the windows in the building with her voice if she wanted to, but she's choosing in Can You Feel the Love Tonight with Donald Glover to complement what he's doing and the moment and the story point and not take away from that and be of service to the story, that the story is greater than the individual here.
I can see what's happening.
I can't what?
And they don't have a clue.
Who's they?
They'll fall in love, and here's the bottom line. Our trio's down to two.
Oh, I get it.
The sweet caress of twilight.
Yeah.
There's magic everywhere.
It's everywhere.
And with all this romantic atmosphere, disaster's in the air.
Can you feel the love tonight? The peace the
he falls in love tonight. It can be assumed. His carefree days with us are history. In short, our pal is doomed.
And I feel the same way with what I do. And I invite all the visual effects artists and the animators not to ever draw attention to away from the story. And when you have all of these talented people working towards the same goal, you really get this sublime outcome. But it comes from everybody sharing these priorities. And they're wonderful personalities. And I have a really good taste for casting. The people that I've worked with have really created my career. Whether it's in the comedies or the superhero movies or here, it's knowing what ingredients to put together. And that's if there's one thing that I've learned and take pride in is my ability to recognize talent in other people and to help support that and encourage that and find a way to incorporate what they do in a way that they feel honors what their contribution is and that the outcome comes out as something that they're proud of. Mm. And so by really letting the vision hit me for how this all comes together and then not taking no for an answer and making sure that I it's best for the project to get these people together and then let them do their thing.
Yeah.
And then get out of the way and not try to change what they do or control what they do, but give them context, help it all work together, but ultimately not try to. You know, I found that as an actor, I found that many directors try to manipulate because it's easier.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it doesn't lend itself to the best creative process. And now that I'm in a position to allow it to happen, I try to keep the parameters of what improvisation is to say yes and to accept, to open your mind to choices you might not expect and see where they may lead you, knowing full well that you have ample time to help corral all of this creativity into a unified vision, but never start from a position of understanding more than you do.
Talking about the improvisation, Billy and Seth, as these two characters that we have grown up with and loved, and the way that they have completely taken ownership and made, almost, I think I said last night, always made their own new characters. I think it's so brilliantly done, and their chemistry together is just extraordinary.
I missed him! I'm gonna get one of those vultures one day! I'm gonna get one!
I don't know why it's so important to you.
I just feel like it would make me feel better. Oh no, it's a little lion!
That is not a lion.
Well, then go check it out. What is
it? That is not a lion. It's a furry bird.
It looks like a lion.
That's not a lion. Let me get a closer look. Excuse me. Oh, all right. Let me see what we're dealing with here. It's a lion! Run for your life, Pumbaa!
Wait, Timon! It's a little lion!
It gets bigger!
Can we keep him? Can we please keep him? Okay. I promise. I'll walk him every day. If he makes a little mess, I'll clean it up!
You'll be his little mess. He's gonna eat you and then use my body as a toothpick.
But one day, when he's big and strong, he'll be on our side.
I've got it. What if he's on our side? Hear me out! Having a ferocious lion around might not be such a bad idea.
Well then, can we keep him?
Yes, of course we can keep him! My God, who is the brains of this operation?
We're gonna name him Fred!
You can't guess that kind of thing, though. You know,
I knew that they would have the guts to do it, and I knew that being funny and doing good work was gonna be more important to them than anything.
Yeah.
And I knew that there were really Timon and Pumbaa, especially Timon, and then also Scar. Those were the roles where I knew I needed to really have the right people in them, because those were the characters that were going to receive the most scrutiny. Because you had James Earl Jones reprising his role as Mufasa, but then you had the most iconic voice performances from the original. Now you had new cast members reinterpreting them. And it's very hard to compete with people's memory of these wonderful performances from the original, but we were asking them to differentiate these characters from the original. And so Chiwetel Ejiofor, great, great stage performer, has the depth and understanding of, of how to play a Shakespearean villain, but also a great instrument, great vocal control.
Yeah.
His voice is trained, he understands, and to be able to sing, be prepared also and interpret it in a new way with a whole new orchestration from Hans Zimmer and new lyrics from Tim Rice, because the old one didn't fit into our film.
Mufasa has always shown too much restraint when it comes to hunting. When I am king, the mighty will be free to take whatever they want, because a hyena's belly is never full.
Mufasa's far too powerful to challenge.
Mufasa is yesterday's message. A clapped-out, distracted regime, whose failings undoubtedly presage the need for a different dream. Yes, leonine times are a-changing, which means that hyenas must too. My vision is clear and wide-ranging, and even encompasses you. So prepare for the coup of the century. Prepare for the murkiest scam. Meticulous planning, tenacity spanning, decades of denial is simply why I'll be king! Undisputed, respected, saluted, and seen for the wonder I am! Yes, my teeth and ambitions are bared. Be prepared. Be prepared. Be prepared. Be prepared. Be prepared. Yes, our teeth and ambitions are bad. Be prepared.
And then Timon and Pumbaa, knowing that they would not rest until they put in as good of a performance as they could and to make the roles their own. And right up until the premiere, they were nervous about it.
Oh, bless them.
And then they just stole the show. So I'm very proud of all of them.
There's a couple of specific cues in the film that really resonated with me that I just kind of jotted down as well. When they enter the elephant graveyard, the score that kind of is over that is... It's terrifying and brilliant and kind of creeps up on you as well. It's so, so good. And then when Simba's being taught a lesson by Mufasa.
Yes.
I love that scene.
Well, that scene with when he's talking about the king is in the stars, and that's the one that gets me now. You know, I used to get really choked up all the time from the sadder stuff, and then it's the sort of bittersweet, melancholy moment there of when the father knows the son's has not really wrapped his head around the notion of mortality, and the father knows but doesn't want to take away from the moment, but instead gives him context for how to think about the sad things before they happen. And you know, so often when you deal with kids, your kids, you want to have them under. Sorry.
You don't want to lie.
No, you don't want to lie, but you also don't want to reveal too much. Yeah. And so you want to give them something that you know that they'll think back upon. And in the case of, you know, the perfect, you know, little snow globe that a movie is, you get to actually reference back to that moment, and he remembers. But the notion of that, the you know, that your ancestors are looking down there, and I will to guide you, and I will always be there to guide you.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, there's that bittersweet hopefulness of that moment, but also the inherent understanding that there is that life guarantees you sorrow. But yet you can make, you can have some of the most sorrowful imagery and moments in this film. And even the cartoon has, you know, if you were to list the most powerful sad moments in film, you know, I'll bet Lion King would pop up. And that's a cartoon from the 90s.
Yeah.
But also what's fascinating about the original is that people would also characterize as one of the funniest, most fun, hopeful, inspiring movies that you have. So to have the lowest of the low, but in the highest of the highs by the end, ushered in, as you point out, by the music. The music is what guides you, because there are certain themes that are played extremely sad, like as Simba wanders off alone into the desert mm-hmm. after losing his, spoiler alert here.
25 years of spoilers.
Okay,
I think we're going to be
all right. turn off the podcast. Okay, you're with me? After losing his father, he wanders off in the desert. Hans Zimmer plays the same theme there in a sad way that he plays triumphantly at the end as he climbs up onto Pride Rock and presents his own child, and it is being sung. Those themes actually, it's as he's climbing up to Pride Rock to roar and become king. It's the same music orchestrated differently with a completely different set of emotions. And that's what's so profound about Hans's work.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, I have to say I'm loving the Chef show.
Thank you.
Oh my God, absolutely love it. And
good
also,
music there too, by the way.
Yeah, I was going to say
we
Mateo.
Recorded
yeah.
all new music there.
Yeah,
for that. Yeah,
amazing that. And I imagine you have great playlists for when you're cooking at home.
Oh yeah, well I love the Chef film soundtrack.
Yeah.
Matthew Schreier put together. That was all. That was mostly needle drops, but in this case, we recorded with one of the artists, the L. Michaels Affair. Brand new music for the Chef show on Netflix.
Yeah.
But really, it was nice. It was a nice project to work on. It's the opposite of Lion King. It was all about enjoying life, bonding together, celebrating, learning about each other's, through food and music and filming without knowing what we were going to do ahead of time and finding it like with a documentary in the editing room. Whereas, like the Lion King, every pixel, every frame was planned and designed and had to be ushered through this painstaking process. So it was a really good way to balance out my creative life.
Amazing. Food, friends, and music. There's nothing better.
That's it.
Great to chat to you again. Thank
great
you so much.
Great talking again.
And congratulations
All right. Next
again.
Next time, then.
Yeah, thank you. Thank
All
you
right.
so much. Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you.
soundtrack to Chef, that's Cream by El Miquel's Affair, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with the fabulous Jon Favreau. My huge thanks to John for taking the time to talk to us a second time round. His astounding reimagining of The Lion King is on general release now, and really, it has to be seen to be believed. If you want to hear John's starter on episode 5 of this podcast, head to edithbowman.com, which is also the place to subscribe and catch up with every other show. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK, and please do keep spreading the word with your pals if you like what you hear. Next up, Nick Broomfield returns to discuss his documentary on the legend that is Leonard Cohen. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.